The following podcast is for information purposes only and should not be considered as a substitute for psychotherapy with a trained mental health professional.
Rational Radio.
Welcome to Rational Radio. I'm Micah Perkins. Today we're going to continue our discussion on disputing. Last podcast, if you remember, we talked about disputing irrational beliefs, and we discussed three different types of disputing. Empirical disputing, logical disputing, and pragmatic disputing. Today, we're going to talk about other ways to dispute those irrational beliefs. During the last podcast, we talked about the importance of disputing beliefs not only cognitively, but also emotively, with a lot of passion, a lot of emotion, and then also behaviorally. Last podcast, those disputes, although they included all three of those things, were primarily cognitive disputes. So today we're going to talk about ways that you can bring those other aspects into your disputing work as well. Now, before we go very much further, I want to talk about the importance of timing in disputing. RBT teaches that it's usually better to first assume that the A is true, that the inference is true, and to dispute the irrational belief first, and then to go back and question the inference. For example, walking in the mall, you see somebody, your coworker, you say hi to them, they don't look at you, they don't acknowledge you, they just keep on walking. So you may infer that they don't like you. He must be mad at me for some reason. What did I do? The irrational belief then may be, he must like me, and it's terrible, awful, the worst thing ever if he doesn't. So usually, the RBT therapist would first assume, okay, well, let's say that he doesn't like you, and let's look at the irrational beliefs. Why must he like you? And dispute the must. Why would it be the worst thing ever if he didn't like you? And dispute the awfulizing. However, there may be times in your own disputing work, in your own life, or as a therapist, whenever you're working with a client, whenever it may be best at the time to not accept the A, and to go ahead and dispute the A, dispute the inference. So for example, a child who suffers from separation anxiety, that whenever they are away from their parent, say in this case their mother, they have this extreme fear, extreme anxiety that something bad is going to happen to mom, mom's going to die if I'm not with her. Then in that situation, particularly with a young child, as a therapist, probably are not going to accept that A and dispute the irrational belief. Okay, well, let's say that your mom is going to die. Why would that be the worst thing ever? Why must she not die? That type of thing. Probably not going to do that. Probably instead going to look at the A and look at the situation. Mom is healthy. Mom doesn't have any health problems, health concerns whatsoever. Going to look at, is that concern, that anxiety, realistic? Mom doesn't have health problems. Mom isn't going to the doctor. So then what is the evidence to support the idea that something bad is going to definitely happen to mom if I leave her? What are some times that you left her and nothing bad did happen? Another situation may be people who suffer from panic attacks. They may begin to have these bodily sensations of tensing in the chest, of rapid heartbeat, of rapid respiration, and then they begin to interpret this as being, I'm dying, I'm having a heart attack, I'm going to die, which then just fuels further anxiety. And instead of looking at the irrational belief of, why must you not die, instead we may look at the inference. Where's the evidence that this is a heart attack, that you're going to die? Particularly people who've gone to the emergency room several times in the past and have had tests done, then they may see that this has happened 20 times before, and every time that I've gone to the hospital, they've done tests and seen that I've not had a heart attack. So it's most likely that I'm not having a heart attack, that this is just another one of those panic attacks. And so we would question that, have them to dispute the inference, have them come up with coping self-statements that they can use during the panic attack. I'm okay, this is just a panic attack. I'm not going to die. I've been to the hospital before. They've done a physical on me. I'm fine. and then teach them some relaxation skills to try to help calm themselves down. Now, is that to say that we should never dispute the idea of dying? No. If the person is emotionally ready and has the insight and intelligence to handle it, then maybe we may take that step. One example may be soldiers in combat. A lot of times, without the help of an REBT therapist, they come to their own conclusion that I'm storming this beach, and although thousands of bullets may be shot at me, I may not get hit by one of them. Or if I do get hit, my Kevlar vest will protect me, or my helmet will protect me. There's a possibility it may hit somebody else and not me. That's disputing the inference. But many of them take the step further and conclude that there's no guarantee that I'm going to make it through this war alive. I hope I do, but there's no guarantee. So if I die, they may not put it in these words, but they may say, it wouldn't be the worst thing ever, because at least I died for my country. At least I died for something I believe in. At least I did my job. So they may come to these conclusions on their own. Whenever I first started in mental health, I worked as a psychiatric worker, and I worked with adolescents. And many of these adolescents came from impoverished neighborhoods, and many of them were in gangs. And I didn't know about REBT back then, but I found that many of these kids have the belief that if I die, I die. If it's my time to go, there's nothing I can do about it. It's not the worst thing ever if I die. And I struggled with that, because how could these kids believe that dying would not be just this horrible, horrible thing? And later on, as I learned more about REBT and was able to look back on that experience, I realized that these kids that had lived in these gang-infested neighborhoods where there was violence daily had come to this conclusion on their own as a way for them to help deal with their own anxiety. That if I happened to get hit by a stray bullet on the way home, then it was my time to go. Because if they hadn't have done this, then they would have just had that constant level of anxiety all the time. It would have been very difficult for them to cope. Now, a lot of these kids that were in gangs may have this belief that if it's my time to go. Dying's not the worst thing ever. But many of them had other irrational beliefs, such as, I must be respected by others. It's awful if I'm disrespected. I can't stand it when I'm disrespected. Or, I must have other friends. And since I must have other friends, then I will be in this gang so that I can be with these people and these people can care about me because I must have these people care about me. And again, looking back on it, I realized that one of the mistakes that we were making in working with these kids is that we were trying to convince them that they were wrong in their belief that dying was a bad thing. And we're trying to convince them that, yeah, dying is a bad thing. It's horrible. Don't do what you're doing. When instead, what we should have been focusing more on was some of their other beliefs, such as, I must be respected, or this is the only way that I can be respected, or I must be part of the gang because I must receive the kind of nurturance that I get from them. But to get back to the original point of whether to dispute the inference of I'm going to die or the irrational belief of I must not die. As a therapist, this is something we'd want to be real careful about because people may not be quite ready for that. They may just need to dispute that particular inference, give them coping skills, coping self-statements, and then go on to something else. If they're ready for disputing the irrational belief, what Ellis calls the elegant solution, if they're ready for that, then great. But they may not. So we should be very careful about that. So in my own life, in my own practice, whenever I'm practicing REBT, I dispute both. If I'm in a situation where, let's say, my boss gives me a strange look or kind of snaps at me or something like that, that's the A. Boss maybe was a little snappy with me, gave me a weird look. I might tell myself, oh my goodness, she's mad at me. And if she's mad at me, I'm going to lose my job. And then my irrational beliefs must be, my boss absolutely must not be mad at me. It's terrible that she's mad at me. And another irrational belief may be, I must not lose my job. That would be the worst thing ever. And so I may take the time to dispute those irrational beliefs. Why must my boss not be mad at me? Why must I not lose my job? But then also dispute that inference. Just because my boss gave me a strange look, or just because she snapped at me, doesn't necessarily mean that she's angry with me. Maybe there's something else that she might be angry about. Maybe she's been under some of her own pressures. And so I can look for evidence to support that inference as well, challenge that, and dispute that as well. In the last podcast, we talked about how you don't want to dispute the irrational belief just in the situation, but also want to dispute the irrational belief when it's not happening. So I don't dispute the irrational belief whenever things are heated. I just had a big argument with my wife. I also want to, when things are going well, when I have some time to myself, dispute that irrational belief then, when I'm calm. Michael Edelstein, in his book 3-Minute Therapy, really stresses this point. And he particularly likes people, and himself, in his own practice, to write out their disputing, their irrational beliefs. That's why he calls it 3-Minute Therapy. He does this 3-minute exercise with himself every day. He finds these irrational beliefs that may be reoccurring in his life and spends 3 minutes every day writing them out and disputing them. When he's calm, when he's not in the middle of some bad situation. Also, there may be some situations where there's so much emotion going on at the time, you may be so angry at the time, that you're not able to think straight clearly enough to be able to dispute. So during those times, we want to come up with what's called coping self-statements. Things you can tell yourself to try to help calm yourself down, so that then you can do the disputing work a little bit later, a few minutes later, hour later, whenever. Those coping self-statements are based in your disputing work, but it's not the whole process of disputing. It's kind of like disputing cliff notes, disputing shorthand. So rather than going through the whole disputing work of why must my wife not be angry with me, what guarantee that I have that she'll never be angry with me, well, I don't have a guarantee. I can't control her. She's going to be angry. I might tell myself something real short like, hey, calm down. It's okay. I can't control her. Or, hey, just take a deep breath. Calm down. Everything's going to be okay. Trying to help calm myself down so that I don't end up making choices that I might regret. I might, during that time, whenever I might feel over-emotional, use some relaxation exercises to calm myself down. So taking deep breaths, counting to 10, or maybe for me it might be 100 because 10 doesn't seem to be long enough. Calming self down, progressive muscle relaxation, calming myself down until I can get to the point that I can think straight enough, that I can think clearly enough to be able to question these irrational beliefs and to question these inferences. So for the last half of the show, we're going to talk about a few more techniques for disputing irrational beliefs and ingraining those more rational beliefs. One technique may be to journal, to write out your feelings and your thoughts. Now that may be helpful in and of itself, just because you're putting on paper things that are going on in your head. There's a certain amount of mental organization that has to occur in order to be able to express those feelings in those words on that paper. So that alone may help you feel better. But to take the next step to get better, start looking what you've written down. And this may be particularly good exercise whenever you are feeling really angry at the time, just to sit down and start writing out all these things that are going through your head, and all the feelings that you're having as you're feeling angry, anxious, depressed. But then after you've done that, come back and look at it and begin to look for some of those irrational beliefs that may be embedded in what you've written. Whenever I was in college, I was going through a breakup with a longtime girlfriend, and in my journal writing, even though I didn't know anything about REBT at the time, I wrote the phrase that some people just need other people, and I am one of those people. Now, looking back on it, I can see how irrational of a belief that was, that I needed another person. So I could have gone back, looking at that phrase, and if I'd known anything about REBT and disputing, began to dispute that belief. Although I would prefer to be in a relationship with someone, a good, healthy relationship with someone, and there are some benefits to being in a healthy relationship with someone. I do not need to be in a relationship with someone. I don't have to be in a relationship with someone in order to survive. Relationships are not like food, water. People live every day without having a romantic relationship in their lives. And so then I can choose to try to build other relationships with people, but there's no evidence to suggest that I need to have a relationship, a romantic relationship with someone in order to get by in life. And incidentally, in the next podcast, to celebrate Valentine's Day, which is February 14th in the U.S., our podcast is going to focus on irrational beliefs and self-destructive behaviors in relationships. So you won't want to miss out on that. So another technique that you can use is to tape record your disputing. Come up with an irrational belief, tape record yourself disputing that irrational belief, and then play it to yourself over and over and over again. This is something that I used one time to help me dispute an irrational belief that I had doing a certain very boring task. I kept procrastinating. And so finally, I saw how self-defeating it was for me to procrastinate doing this boring task. I disputed it into a tape player, and then whenever I got ready to do this boring task, I put on my headphones and listened to myself disputing this irrational belief while I was doing this task. Something else you can do is to record you disputing your irrational belief and then have other people listen to that tape recording who are familiar with REBT. And they may be able to listen to it and help you tweak your disputing a little bit. Maybe able to give you some more ideas on your disputing. Another thing that can be helpful in your disputing work is to gain material from reading things such as autobiographies, reports about people's lives, or to watch movies, particularly movies that are based on real-life events, that may be able to help you gain more information whenever you're disputing. So, for example, possibly reading something about Helen Keller and all the things that she went through in her life, all the adversities that she went through. And by reading that, that may be inspiring to you, that you may see that, look, here's an example of a person that had a lot of adversity that was thrown at her. Whenever you read that, pick out some of the beliefs that that person had formed that helped them to get through this. And if they're a person writing about their own life, that may be a little bit easier to do. They may talk about how they came to certain life conclusions, life realizations. Or if it's maybe not that straightforward, just imagine, what types of beliefs does this person have about life that helped them get through their adversities? If you're a religious person, maybe you might gain some additional material from the Bible or the Quran or the Book of Mormon, something like that. So, for example, if we look at disputing people rating, if you're drawing some material from the Bible, then you may say, why must people like me? Look, Jesus Christ, the Son of God, came down to earth, and people didn't like him. People loved him, and then they all turned against him. So much to the point that they nailed him up on the cross. Jesus Christ himself said that people aren't going to always like you. And so why then is it realistic for me to think that people will always like me if they didn't always like Jesus Christ? So that may be something that you can use to help add in your disputing. Another technique that is used in disputing is called rational emotive imagery, and this is a technique that Albert Ellis came up with. And in this technique, the person sits quietly, relaxes, takes some deep breaths, and then begins to think about an adversity that they may be having difficulty with, and begin to imagine as vividly as possible that adversity. And while they're imagining that, then to feel, to allow, to elicit these feelings to come up. So if it's an adversity that brings about anger, that you feel that anger come up in your gut and just grow and grow and grow. And then you begin to turn that anger from rage into irritation, into annoyance, into irritability. Change it from an unhealthy feeling to a healthy feeling. And then once you've done that, notice what types of underlying beliefs, what types of things was I telling myself, what types of underlying rational beliefs was I using to change that rage into healthy concern or to annoyance or to irritability. And we may find that I changed my belief from that person is a no good, rotten person because they did this to me to I don't like what this person did to me, but that doesn't mean that they're a no good, rotten person. I just don't like what they did. Or I might have changed it from the irrational belief that I can't stand this situation to a more rational belief of I can stand it. It's not the worst thing ever. So this is another technique that can be used over and over and over again to help ingrain those more rational beliefs. And incidentally, when we talk about using imagery and visualization in REBT, I recently have been studying a lot on Buddhist philosophy. That's one of my other things that I like to do, is study a lot about different religions and philosophies and things like that, and have found that they use a lot of imagery in their meditation practice in order to help instill compassion. And in a lot of ways, their thoughts on compassion are congruent with REBT's thoughts on unconditional other acceptance. And so you can expect that in future podcasts, whenever we start talking about how to develop unconditional other acceptance, that you're going to hear me throw in some of those things that I've learned from some of these other philosophies as well. Another technique that can be used to ingrain these rational beliefs is to come up with a rational song. And this is one of Ellis's hallmarks. He's come up with several different songs. I had the pleasure of hearing him sing some of those songs during one of the trainings. I believe at the Albert Ellis Institute, you can actually buy a tape of him singing these songs, that he'll take a popular tune and then he'll add rational lyrics to this tune that it turns out to be this quirky little rational song that he'll sing. So this is a technique that I haven't used a whole lot. And it really wasn't until a couple of years ago that I used rational songs to help me dispute an irrational belief. At the time, I was working at a job that I felt disrespected, or at least not respected, that I wasn't receiving the type of respect from my supervisor that I should be getting. So I was finding myself growing more and more irritable. And one day, I finally realized that, hey, this is a reoccurring belief. I'm getting more and more irritable by the day with this thing. So this is something I need to work on. So I pulled out all the stops. I disputed that irrational belief cognitively. I wrote out my disputations. I gave myself little notes around my workspace to remind myself of rational things, rational self-statements. And I also decided to come up with a little rational song. So it goes something like this, and please forgive me if you want to put your podcast on mute for the next few seconds, I understand. It's to the tune of Battle Hymn of the Republic. It goes like this. Everybody likes to be valued by their boss, but I tend to think that it's a must-have at all cost. How much longer am I going to carry this cross and make myself miserable? Glory, glory all to me, thinking this will make me screwy. It's their loss if they don't listen to me, but I refuse to be miserable. And so I sang that quirky little tune over and over and over again to myself. And before I knew it, I was singing that little tune in the shower, just humming right along with the words. Before I knew it, I'm mowing the lawn and singing that little quirky tune to myself. Before I knew it, I'm walking down the hallway at my workplace singing this little quirky tune to myself. And that belief began to become more and more ingrained until it got to the point that I truly believed that. Not to say that I was 100% over that belief, but it had improved by 95%. That I was able to let a lot of things go, that I no longer demanded that I must be respected, and was able to accept that there are certain things that I didn't have any control over, that all I could do was all I could do. So that might be something that might be helpful for you as well. So last, we're going to talk about some behavioral methods. So these are techniques that primarily focus on behavior, on doing an action that helps to dispute this irrational belief. I like to call these experiential disputes, just because they are experiences that I put myself into or that I do to help me dispute these underlying irrational beliefs. One of Ellis's most famous behavioral technique is called shame attacking. And this is to dispute the belief that other people must think well of me, that they must like me, and if they don't, it's terrible, it's awful, it's the worst thing ever. And so what the person is instructed to do is to do something that other people would consider strange, weird, even nutty. So an example of a shame attacking exercise might be for a person to walk down a busy street on the sidewalk, walking their imaginary dog. And so they have this leash that they're just pulling along the sidewalk, talking to their imaginary dog while they're walking down the street. Other people are looking at them, thinking that this person is a little strange, and then walking on by. And this helps to prove to the other person that it's not terrible if people think strangely of me. It's not the worst thing ever. I can stand it. Now, one of the things that Ellis cautions in shame attacking exercises is that you pick something that will not get you put in jail, that will not get you beat up by other people, that is just something that people may look at you and think that you're a little bit off your rocker, or you might be mildly annoying, but it's not anything to elicit a riot or to get you harmed in any way. So please remember that whenever you're picking out your shame attacking exercise. Another behavioral method is to actually do the thing that you are afraid of doing. So for example, if you have anxiety about talking in front of other people, of a group of people, is that you actually do that and prove to yourself that it's not the worst thing ever. Now the thing is that this can turn out either way. If it turns out well, then you'll see that your inference was incorrect. If you get up there and you just do the best speaking job, people stand up and just clap and yell out your name and they just love you, then you're disputing the inference that I'm a bad speaker, that this is going to turn out bad. If, on the other hand, you bomb at it, which, of course, no one wants to bomb at anything, but if you bomb at it and people are booing you off the stage and just hissing at you and you get off the stage, you'll find that although that was unpleasant, although I didn't really like it, it's not the worst thing ever. I'm still alive. The crowd didn't storm me and kill me. I can stand it, talking badly. So although I prefer to talk well, it's not the worst thing ever whenever I don't. So in that respect, succeeding is helpful, but also failing is helpful. And there may be times in your behavioral assignments when you might want to intentionally fail at something to prove to yourself that it's not the worst thing ever. One of the biggest behavioral assignments I gave to myself was that I actually changed jobs and took a job which I knew would put me much more in the limelight than the job that I was in before. One of the irrational beliefs that I was disputing at the time was that other people must like me. And by putting myself in this position where, as part of my job, I had to give bad news, as part of my job, I had to tell employees things that they didn't really want to hear, things they didn't really want to do. And as a result of that, I actually had some employees, even though I was still trying to be nice, I wasn't intentionally being mean, that really began to grow to dislike me. I was able to dispute those irrational beliefs and was able to get over that hurdle. So now it's to the point that although I prefer other people to like me, it's much less of a demand that other people must like me at all times. At all cost, I must be liked by other people. Not to say that that irrational belief still doesn't come up from time to time, but much less so than it did before. And I believe one of the reasons for that is because I took such a drastic step to try to work on overcoming that irrational belief. So this leads me to the last point that I'd like to make today, is that even after doing all this disputing, cognitively, emotively, behaviorally, and working hard, over and over and over at it, really working on instilling these rational beliefs, At no point will you ever be 100% rational all the time, because we're imperfect, fallible human beings. There will most likely always be some area in your life that you still need to work on. Now, by using these techniques, you can learn to feel better more often and to be able to have better self-help and behaviors and better self-help and beliefs. But you'll always still have some of those things that you need to work on. So life is a challenge. So continually work on uncovering your irrational beliefs and working on them. Well, that's all that we have for today. I enjoyed it very much. I hope you did too. I'll see you next time.